You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Have you been seeing strange things? Things that you can't explain?
We have the ability to see what no one else can. When they lose control, they can't hide. And we see them for what they really are. You are one of the last grips.
Welcome to Grimly Speaking. Today's episode was Maiden Quest. It was the fourth episode of the fifth season of Grimm. I'm Maya. I'm doing this one solo. So share with your friends and everybody. You can leave a message on scififorme.com. You can email me at scififorme.com. You can also call our hotline, which is 573-42-SCI-FI. And, you know, let me know what you think. Maybe I need many more people to help me out and talk with me. I happen to be recording this episode on my birthday. I waited a couple of days. I was hoping to be able to round up somebody else to talk with me, but, you know, chips are down. You're going to do it. You got to do what you got to do, and so this is what I got to do. I'm doing it all by my lonesome, but I'm not terribly alone. I've got my cat is down here in the basement with me, Jinx. He's roaming around. He'll probably start meowing because that's what he does. He didn't want to be outside of the basement. He had to be in here with me. But as soon as I've closed the door and I start recording, chances are he's then going to want to be out of the basement because he's a cat. A brief recap of this episode. It was pretty straightforward. Not a lot of twists and turns to it. I think most people saw who the actual killer was pretty early on. There were a lot of telltales or, you know, hints, clues to what was actually going on there. We have a new, I think it's a new kind of Vessen. I don't remember them before. They're called, and I'm going to probably really butcher this one, Vetten Ogden or something like that. They're a lynx-like Vessen. I wasn't really impressed with the CGI work on this week's episode. There was a few times, honestly, the first time we saw our killer and spoiler here, it was a she. She was in full vogue and she was attacking our would-be killer. I thought it was some sort of like puffer fish thing. It looked all spiky on the head and everything. I couldn't tell it was anything cat-like at all. And that was kind of disappointing to me later when I figured out that that was actually supposed to be a cat-like Vessen, a lynx-like Vessen, they called it. Vetten Ogden or something like that. Somebody will, I mean, they say it on the episode. And yes, I've watched it a couple of times now, but I still don't have the pronunciation down, so forgive me on that one. Call in and give me the correct pronunciation. Maybe you want to call in and be a part of future podcasts of Grimly Speaking. So this is going back, there's a whole, the title Maiden Quest is all about this ceremony or tradition that they have called Macht sucht Acht, and that's as good as I can pronounce that one. And it has to do with our lynx-like Vessen and a very old tradition of three suitors. Each, well, they get a turn one by one depending on the success of the previous two suitors, previous suitor. They choose a golden feather from this griffin statue. The one with the longest feather gets to try the quest first, and then depending on their success, it goes to the next suitor, and so on. The quest set before these three young men by the father is he has asked for the head of the man who ordered the death or the killing of his own son. He had a son, he has a daughter, and he says that he is issuing this challenge, the Macht Zut Acht, to find the most capable, the best person to take the hand of his daughter and take over his business and everything. It's like winner takes all prize sort of thing. Okay, even as our guys are selecting their feathers, the daughter is standing in the background and she looks so unhappy. If one of these men, if she liked any one of these men, if she wanted to be a part of this Macht Zut Acht, then you would expect a little more cheerfulness somewhere on her countenance, but it just isn't there, which is why it's not surprising when we find out that it's actually her that's killing the suitors one by one as they try to kill Frankie. Frankie is not a good guy, and it's hard to cheer for him not being killed because he's such a not good guy. He's rude to people in his employment. He's rude to his girlfriend. He is a club owner, nightclub owner, probably has other, I'll call them business dealings, but they're probably illegal business dealings going on, which is why I expect he had a hit put out on Troyer's son. Troyer is the guy who has set this Maiden Quest challenge. I'm kind of jumping around. I don't have Cammy here to keep me on track. Sorry. Okay, so that's kind of generally what's going on. So you have your first suitor. He goes in. He tries to kill Frankie, but he is killed. And one by one, each of them is killed. Well, no, that's not true, because our last guy actually isn't killed. One of the fun things in the episode, a nod to naughtiness and fun, the sign for Frankie's nightclub is a big pink neon sign of a bomb with a big letter F on it. So the club is called F-Bomb, which I thought was kind of fun. But, you know, probably just me. What else is going on? We've got domestic stuff between Nick and Adeline. Baby Kelly is suffering some colic. Not a fun thing in any case. They use, of course, Rosalie and Monroe to find out what is going on with this, with the golden feathers. And that's how they discover that it's a Macht Zut Acht and what is actually going on here. They arrest the third suitor as he's leaving Troyer's home and, of course, find the third feather in his pocket. Under questioning, he admits that, yes, that's what's going on, but that they don't really understand the consequences. He has already confided to Troyer that he doesn't want to be a part of this Macht Zut Acht, that he's gay, he doesn't want to marry Emily. But of course, Troyer doesn't really care because it's not about the men anyway. He has put out this challenge to discover, to find out if his daughter is strong enough, independent enough to take over the family business, if she is in fact to be the successor to his business, his empire. And apparently killing, you know, two out of three of your suitors qualifies you to take over the family business. I'm grateful that that's not our usual way of determining who's going to take over the family business anymore. That would be kind of a sucky way to have things done. Not a whole lot of Monroe and Rosalie this week, which is nice because it starts to become a case of, you know, you wonder why they are friends with Nick and anybody else that he associates with, since being associated with him seems to include weekly drama, being in mortal danger, that sort of thing. We actually get a really nice just a sit-down dinner with Monroe and Rosalie. Of course, they get interrupted by a phone call. Baby Kelly is sick, and we don't know what is wrong with baby Kelly. It's just baby stuff. Babies sometimes cry, and we can't figure out why. Their tummy hurts or something is going on. There is something going on. Rosalie gets a letter from somebody in her past, and somebody else that she knew in her past has died, and it's kind of cryptic letter. She's not happy to receive the news, not just about the death. She's not happy to get this letter, period. She doesn't want any news from that time in her life, which also creates another sweet moment between she and Monroe as they both confess that the part of their life that they're most happy about is the time now, the time since they both met each other, that's the part of their life that they're most happy with. And that, I think, is really about the end of our recap there. So I'm going to throw this to a break, and I will be back after these messages.
Sci-Fi for Chicks will be right back.
Hi, this is Jason Hutt, editor-in-chief at scififorme.com, taking a moment to say thank you for listening to this podcast and to invite you to listen to our other podcasts. We have opinions on a lot of things, and we hope you join us both in listening to our thoughts and sharing your own. You can find it all by going to scififorme.com and clicking the podcast tab. Books, movies, TV, conventions, video games, comic books, the latest news, all in one place. scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
The fall TV season is upon us, and you know what that means. Recaps. Join us over at scififorme.com as we dive into new shows and new seasons with our unique blend of dry facts and colorful opinions. We talk about the shows and share our analysis, and you're more than welcome to join the conversation. Fall TV is on. Only at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Hi, folks. My name is Timothy Hardy, and I am one of the co-hosts of H2O, the weekly show about everything genre that I host with Mr. Jason Hunt. And we talk about pretty much anything you need to hear about or want to hear about or didn't know you needed to hear about in the world of sci-fi, fantasy, horror, science fiction, all these great things that we cover every week. And it is just a opportunity for you to tune in and listen to some really, really fun stuff. H2O, scififorme.com. We'd love to have you listen.
Our transmitters are made from hand wavium. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Welcome back to Grimly Speaking. I'm still Maya. I'm still by myself. And I'm down in the basement with a kitty cat, Jinx. Okay, so did I like this episode? Of course I like this episode. I enjoy watching Grimm. Do I think it was one of their best episodes? No. I think the CGI work could be done better. I think there could have been more twists and turns to the story. Maybe there are some more twists and turns and I didn't even really see them. You know, there's, of course, the unknowns about the letter that came to Rosalie. There's the unknown about what's going on with Trouble at the very end. Trouble crashes into the building where Nick and Adeline are living, how she found that. I think she supposedly crashed in with the motorcycle. I mean, that's what you're kind of made to think there. She crashed into the building on a motorcycle and somehow ended up away from the motorcycle around the other side of the building. He finds her. She looks bad. I mean, she looks like she's about ready to collapse. In fact, she seems to kind of collapse in his arms. She looks very beaten up. Now, whether that's how much of that is from the motorcycle crash and how much of that happened behind door number one back in the cell, I don't know. I can't tell. And why, you know, where did the motorcycle come from? Whole lot of unknowns there. Don't even particularly know that she was on the motorcycle. That's what I assume, but don't know that for sure. You know, that could have, somebody could have rammed the motorcycle into the building, dropped her off separately. A whole bunch of things could have happened. So that's kind of an unknown, but that didn't have a lot to do with anything else that's going on in the episode. We still have a lot of darkness going on as far as lighting in the series, but I think that's just kind of the mood that the whole Grimm series is going to have, and might as well get used to it because that's the way it is. One of the things I forgot to talk about in the recap, there's an extended scene of Sean Renard is more involved in this episode than he is in some. Sometimes he is really just in his office, and they come in and kind of keep him abridged of what's going on with the case, and that's about it. Today, he not only is aware of what's going on with the case, he goes with them to question the mother. Let's see, the mother of the first suitor victim. Because, yeah, both they're trying to figure out what the connection is, and, you know, they're trying to figure out who actually killed him. I don't think this was very smart on Nick's part. He shows his Vessen hand and lets her know that he is a Grimm. She's like the head prosecuting attorney, or, and I'm getting this title wrong too because I didn't write it down. She's like the head of the DA. Somebody's going to have to correct me on that. She's a big wig attorney type person in the city. And now she knows, she had heard that Renard had a Grimm working for him. She now knows who it is, what his position is, everything. She knows all of that. Now, that just really didn't seem smart to me at all that Nick would play that hand and let that out. She vogued in front of him. That was another time when I didn't like the CGI work. I thought it looked, it didn't blend well into her. I didn't like the way it worked at all. It looked kind of, well, very CGI-y and fake looking on her. Some of the CGI work that they do in the show works really well, and some of it not quite so well. And this was one of those times when I didn't think it worked so well. In fact, all of the Vogue work in this episode was some of my less favorite work. I probably just ticked off some technicians. Sorry, just my opinion. One person's opinion. She doesn't really have a lot of information for them. She knows that her son was invited to dinner the night before at Mr. Troyer's house, which actually is kind of dangerous later, because then she goes to Frankie and tells Frankie that it's Troyer that has put out the hit on him, which leads Frankie to just brazenly walk into Troyer's home and threaten him with a gun. Of course, Troyer vogues, then Emily vogues trying to save her dad. Troyer is shot. Nick and Hank run in. The cavalry runs in at the very last moment. And they're going to arrest Troyer, not Emily. And the explanation, which they've already somehow have thought out, is that it's going to be too tricky to prove what Emily has done, that she's killed three people. They're going to arrest Troyer on the basis that he put the hit out on Frankie. I guess that they can prove that easier than proving what Emily has done. It doesn't make for great police work. It's certainly not very... It doesn't tip the scales of justice very well. And again, it's one of those times of, in particular, Nick turning his head from actual police work and justice and doing what he wants as a Grimm, which is why when he doesn't do that, for instance, last week not helping out those Vessen kids, it bothers me. It really does. It's like he just picks and chooses when he's going to play by the rules and when he's not, and when he's going to, play the Grimm card and when he's not. And I kind of don't get how he justifies that in his own head. Yeah. Amos was our last suitor. He's the only one who doesn't die. kudos to him. He admitted to, did I tell you that he admitted to Troyer that he's gay and that's why he's not interested in the quest? Which was interesting. So this is one time when they, when a gay character actually gets to live. Doesn't always happen, but this time it did. Some of the scenes with Adeland and Nick were nice. Nice in that you saw them being an actual new parents. They had to deal with the crying baby, trying to make dinner. Adeland did tell him that she knows that there's a job out there. He feels it's too early for her to go back to work. And I think he's right, but, you know, it's... And I also understand her point of view in that it's nice to know that there is a job out there if and when she wants it and she wants to take that. And of course she will at some point, probably sooner rather than later, just because I know from having been a young mother that the claustrophobia of just taking care of a baby can be, wow. I mean, it's cabin fever to a really high degree. And she's basically in the kind of a barracks bunker type thing with one kind of tunnel with an ancient door at the end of the tunnel. And that's another, you know, a Chekhov gun. The door is there. At some point it's going to be opened. And I'm guessing it's not going to be opened by Nick first. I'm concerned that something else is going to come from the other side. That would be my concern. I would think if I were them, I would try to barricade their side of the door as much as possible and make that as safe as you can, because if there's a door there, there's probably the tunnel on the other side, and if they know about the tunnel, it's possible somebody else can or and will find out about the tunnel and make their way to them from the other side. The uncomfortableness of the two of them is still there, the awkwardness. Adeland asked him to sleep in her room, and I'm putting that in air quotes because it's kind of not a room, but it is their room, part of their living space again, which seems awkward. At least I didn't have to see them in bed. Do see them both having to share the bathroom. She doesn't have clothes, so now she's wearing Nick's shirt. Claire Coffey is just cute as can be in that shirt. It's a little awkward as Adeland seeing her in just Nick's shirt, but Claire Coffey, you rock that shirt, really. And look awesome, considering you just had baby Kelly not that long ago. So the S&M section, which I'm doing by myself also, is my speculations and musings. So my speculations are about the door, of course, that somebody else is going to arrive on the other side of that. Also, that we're going to find out that letting this mother, that's the DA or whatever her title is, know who the Grimm is in Renard's precinct, not a good idea. I think that's going to come back to bite him. I think that something to do with that letter that Rosalie got, we're going to find out more about that. Either the writer of the letter may show up at her door or something, but I don't think we're done with that one. There's going to be more from her past. Rosalie apparently has a very colorful and interesting past, as does Monroe, although we've only seen bits of Monroe's background as well. There was a past girlfriend that was introduced in, I think it was season one, but she was killed. And so that part of his past is literally dead and won't come back. Although I think we're going to be fun if we got some more of Monroe's past as well. How did he get into clocks? You know, how did Christmas become such a huge thing for him? He goes overboard on holidays, on decorating for holidays in such a wonderful way. That's one of the things that, you know, you end up liking about him so much. And one of the things that I, as a contrast, don't like about our character, Nick, is that he is so bland. We know so very little about him. Most of what you know about him, you could have read in the cliff notes of the pilot, and we haven't gotten to know a whole lot more about him. How come he doesn't have any special interests or quirkiness to his character? Those kind of things give a character more depth and make them more interesting, and Nick could really use some of that. Sergeant Wu has more of that. Monroe has more of that. Rosalie has more of that. We don't know much about Hank or Nick, and both of those characters need more depth, more details, more quirks, more things to make us interested in them. They just do. We need more about them. My favorite part of this episode? My favorite part of this episode? That Trouble is back. I think that's going to make this more interesting. I didn't like seeing her all beat up, but her arrival at the very end of this episode probably is one of the best things to happen to this episode. My least favorite part of this episode would be the CGI work. I didn't like the Vogas. They didn't look realistic. And they made them so hard to see when Emily was attacking her suitors that I couldn't even tell what kind of Vessen she was at all. Oh, and another musing. I know I passed that section, but I'm going back to it. It's my prerogative. It's my show. I wonder if Sergeant Wu is going to visit Frankie in his padded room, if he's going to help him through this. Is he going to give him information to help him get through this and let him know what Vessen are? Or is he just going to let Frankie, because he's such a not nice guy to begin with, just dangle and, you know, go off the deep end? Because by the end of the episode, Frankie was a blubbering idiot in the corner, and, you know, it's going to take an awful lot for him to come back. The promos for next week, oh my gosh. So our Rat King for next week looks like, you know, those old monster movies with the stop action stuff, sort of the Godzilla movies? Yeah, our Rat King looks kind of like that. Please prove me wrong. Please, I'm hoping this is going to be better than it looked, because it looked really bad. Oh, yeah. Anyway, love to hear from you guys. You can email us, scififorchicks@scififorme.com. There's two Twitter handles that you can comment on, scififorme and scififorchicks. Okay, we still have that hotline number, 573-42-SCIFI. I don't know how much it gets used, but, you know, leave me a message. I would love to have some call and response kind of stuff. That would be so cool. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, YouTube, Google+, Pinterest. Pinterest is specifically for cosplay, which is really cool. We are on... Our Sci-Fi for Me radio is on iTunes. And don't forget, we've got some other podcasts that I take part in and some that I don't take part in. Level 117 is specifically about the Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show. But when that's not on, we talk about other things in the Marvel Universe. There's H2O, which is Mr. Harvey and Mr. Hunt. Get it? It took me a while to get what it meant by H2O. I'm not sure what the O is about, but the two H's is Harvey and Hunt. I'm so slow. It took me forever to figure that one out. There's also other Sci-Fi for Chicks shows. There's the iZombie show, and I think they'll be coming back with an Orphan Black coverage stuff. There's Walking Dead, all kinds of stuff. Check it out. You know, it's free. Free content, free entertainment. Check back in with us next week when hopefully Cammie or somebody else will be helping me out, because Lord knows I need some help here. Until next week, be grim.
Arr! This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.